Backyard Green Films is proud to present this episode of Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Alara and her husband, Rick, travel throughout the land in their teardrop trailer that they have nicknamed Maggie, bringing you stories about their travels and the people they meet. They visit farmers, ranchers, and just about anyone who loves putting their hands in the dirt or their feet in stirrups. In those travels, they have gotten to meet some very interesting people. Here's one of those interviews.
Hi, this is Alara. Welcome back to our podcast. At the time of this recording, we're still in the early stages of the coronavirus pandemic here in the United States. One thing that often comes up now in conversation is the availability of food, at least in the ways we used to be able to get it. I don't know about you, but we're finding that while the less perishable items are still very much available and are very welcome, they're already getting a bit familiar. One thing that is showing in the marketplace is the reduced variety of different types of animal products, in other words, meats. So we thought we'd bring you a conversation about one of the other animals that's grown for meat, and one that might become more and more familiar to us in times of resource conservation. It's one that has really evolved in my thinking and my taste buds over the course of the last few years since I've learned a bit more about it. I'm talking about lamb and mutton. So this week, we bring you an interview that we truly enjoyed. The day we met Bill and Lori Marion at the Mother Earth News Fair in Albany, Oregon, there was a lot going on, most of which you can probably hear in the background. That fair was held in Southern Oregon on the first week of August. I don't know if you've been to Oregon in July and August, but if you manage to hit a day under 80 degrees, you're probably pretty lucky. In our experience, it's usually very hot, very dry, and has big chunks of the state on fire at any given time. Okay, so maybe that's just the last 2 years that we were up there in the summer, but it seems to hold true. Maybe that's true of large portions of the entire western United States during July and August, now that I think about it. Anyway, during our interview, you can hear the big fans going, trying to keep the livestock barn a bit cooler, and the big air tankers are flying periodically overhead, working valiantly to save those gorgeous trees the state is famous for. The livestock gates are clanking a bit, and the cattle are mooing intermittently, and the kids are oohing and aahing over the baby sheep and goats. You'll have to imagine the faint smell of smoke, the not-so-faint smell of the delicious falafel cart, and a little bit of straw and manure in the air as well. It might sound bad, but a county fair smell is a wonderful mix. Anyway, back to Bill and Lori. They're near the top of our favorite interview list for a few reasons. The first is that they are truly nice people. They are very much representative of the types of farmers that we've met in the rural areas of Oregon, in that they're sometimes a bit more quiet rather than rambunctious. They're hardworking, but not showy about it. They're generous with their time and willing to share their knowledge with interested strangers. And they're happy to show off their sometimes bizarre livestock guardian animals. You think I'm kidding about that last one, but it's actually pretty consistent with Oregonians so far. We met the biggest damn llama I've ever seen at Bidawi Farm in Newburgh, watching over the Navajo Churro and Jacob's American Sheep. The livestock guardian dogs at Cozine Springs Ranch in McMinnville were in charge of the herd of Spanish goats, and they let us know in no uncertain terms that stranger danger was high on their list. And the donkey at Shasta Ranch, who definitely watched us very carefully as Bill and Lori showed us the flock. We got to see the donkey in our on-site visit to Shasta Ranch the year after we met them at the fair, because Bill and Lori invited us to come and see the ranch. It is beautiful up there in that remote area, situated just north of the California border, next to a wildlife refuge and Klamath Lake. There was phenomenal bird watching from the driveway, including hawks, songbirds, and barn owls. And I got to hold a baby lamb. If you want to see a clip from that visit, check us out on our YouTube channel for Backyard Green Films. And yes, I know, I do have a completely sappy look on my face. You hold a week-old lamb and film yourself and see what your face does. I'm not one of those people who thinks that human babies are cute just because they're babies, let me tell you, but lambs, stupid face every time. The Marians were incredibly well-spoken, so they can tell you the specifics of the St. Croix sheep much better than I can. I will say that this breed is said to be parasite-resistant, an efficient grazer, low-maintenance, hardy, and does not grow wool. Yep, you heard it. They're a hair sheep, not a wool sheep. I'd never even heard of a hair sheep prior to our Holstein Dilemma adventure. But think about the advantage of that one, especially if you're a person that wants to grow lamb for meat, but doesn't want to hire a shearer every 6 months. How much easier would that be? And to top off all of those advantages, the male sheep in all their glory look kind of like a lion. We've included some links in our podcast intro so you can look it up if you don't believe me. I hope you enjoy the interview with the delightful Bill and Lori Marion, the future hosts of my spring farm stay barn sleepover adventure, if I can convince them that the lambs need company by the next time we swing through southern Oregon.
I'm Lori Marion.
I'm Bill Marion.
And our farm is Shasta Ranch. There we have St. Croix sheep, and we're located in the Klamath Hills there, which is eastern Oregon over the Cascades. It's hot and dry in the summer and cold and snowy in the winter.
When you say hot and dry, what kind of hot and dry are we talking about?
We will get less than an inch of rain all through June, July, and August. Temperatures can be upwards of 90. This has been a hot summer. We've had a few days over 100, but most of them over 90. So everything is dry out there except the sagebrush, which is kind of gray and green.
Tell me about the heritage breed sheep that you chose or that chose you.
That's a good point. Our sheep are St. Croix hair sheep. They originated in the U.S. Virgin Islands in the 15 and 1600s. They were possibly a result of the native breed, the Criollo, and West African hair sheep, also bred with the Wiltshire horn, which is an English sheep, when the English arrived there. They are sheep that shed rather than needing to be sheared. They grow a winter coat so they can survive the winter, and then they'll shed in the spring. They're very parasite resistant, which is a product of being raised on these islands, naturally developed, and they're also very good with hoof rot. Their hooves stay healthy even in moist conditions with just a little bit of care. So,
you mentioned parasite resistance with these to both worms and fly strike.
Yes. Because these sheep shed their hair, they don't get the fly strike issues because they don't have the wool that captures dirt and urine and feces so the flies don't find a place to live. You don't have to dock their tails. The breed standard says it's fine to leave them long. And in fact, that's what we find, that their tails stay clean and they can lamb without any problem and nurse and everything works well. So fly strike's not an issue. And the parasite resistance for internal parasites is phenomenal. So we have never really had a problem, and it is a problem for many breeds of sheep.
Now, the phrase the pasture vacuum came up with regard to parasites. Can you tell me a little bit about that, please?
I think the idea is that they eat the grass where the parasites develop because one part of their life cycle is on the ground. And because these sheep can eat the grass and not develop the parasites, they can clean out the pasture and kind of eliminate those growth cycles for the parasites so that if you move in the next sheep or a different animal, there are no parasites left in the field.
Tell me about the breed organization that you belong to and why you think registration is important.
All right, there is an organization, the St. Croix Hair Sheep Breeders Association, that registers the sheep. It was started by the professor who imported the original flock in 1975, and they're a tremendous source of support and help for both finding good stock and connecting breeders with buyers and connecting breeders with other breeders so that we can maintain some genetic diversity there. We need to maintain the breed by keeping things freely flowing, genes freely flowing back and forth there. They're also a good source of support for how to care for your sheep. Registration helps keep the breed what it is. If we allow crossbreeding kind of randomly and still refer to them as St. Croix, you lose the characteristics that really define the breed. What registration does is guarantee that the genetic stock that is the St. Croix sheep remains that genetic stock.
What are the breed characteristics of the St. Croix sheep?
St. Croix sheep tend to be a medium-sized sheep. The average ewe will be between 140 and 150 pounds. A ram can be up to at least 200, sometimes over. The rams tend to grow a very nice mane that can sometimes reach down to their knees, and they have a very pronounced Roman nose, so they look very regal, some of the rams. But as I said, both sexes are polled, which means they don't have horns, and they tend to, even the rams tend to be very docile. They tend not to be aggressive towards humans at all. They are mostly white in the United States. The first year that the sheep shed, sometimes they do a less than perfect job and they'll look a little ratty-tatty, but after that they get it down perfectly and they'll be completely smooth by 6 months, by June. So
tell me about the differences between a wool sheep and a hair sheep.
Sheep that grow wool continue to grow wool and they have to be sheared. You can't opt not to. If you don't shear them, they can grow just loads of wool and it will eventually harm the animal and, you know, not be a good thing, possibly cause it to die. These are hair sheep that will grow a winter coat of hair, not wool, and then when it's springtime, they will drop it on their own. It will shed gradually in pieces so that if you don't shear them, there's no problem. And in fact, you really can't shear them because they don't have wool, they have hair. Younger sheep, sometimes their first year will shed a little incompletely and they'll look a little motley with a few hairs hanging off of them. But after that first year, they really get the hang of it until they are just slick by early summer.
We went to a sheep shearing up in Salt Spring Island near Vancouver, and we learned that it is a production to shear a sheep.
It is. Shearing sheep is difficult. It's hard to find a person, a professional, who's able to do it. For those who want to spin and knit and produce wool, it's a wonderful thing. But there's no commercial wool market for your average sheep. So not having wool is not a drawback for us. In fact, we appreciate the easy care aspect of a sheep that doesn't grow wool, doesn't need to be sheared.
The purpose of this animal is as a meat breed, is that correct? Tell us about that, please.
That's correct. We raise these sheep as a meat breed and for breeding stock, because we did want a conservancy animal, a livestock breed that was endangered, and that's what these are. We raise them for meat. We find that they are more tender than the most lamb that I've had. They do have that kind of lamb taste and smell, but it's much more delicate than some of the lamb that I've had. So I can definitely recommend it as lamb for table use.
One of the things you mentioned was about the fat to bone to meat ratio and that it's different on this sheep. Would you say that this is a less fatty sheep?
That's right, it is. It doesn't develop the outer layer of fat that some sheep will, and it does have the higher muscle to bone ratio, so a smaller sheep will yield more meat for you.
It's my understanding that this breed produces between 1 and 4 lambs per year, is that correct?
That's correct. St. Croix sheep are aseasonal breeders so that they can breed at any point during the year. Their gestation period is about 5 months. Typically, they have twins, although triplets and even quads are not unknown. And because they breed at any point in the year, with some planning, you can have 3 lamb crops in 2 years, or you can push a ewe and get 2 lamb crops in 1 year, but we like to keep our sheep healthy and give them a break in between to kind of restore themselves.
And I also heard that within 60 days, the babies are capable of procreating, so you have to separate the babies from the mothers at that point.
It is true they mature early. The St. Croix sheep will mature early. We don't have too many issues because unless you're raising a ram, your lambs are weathered so that they're not going to impregnate their mothers or anything like that. We generally let them nurse for 8 to 10 weeks there, and they've gotten a good start at that point. and are eating a full diet of hay and alfalfa and grass and what browsing with the rest of the flock there. These sheep are excellent mothers. They have their twins or triplets or quads, and they do a great job of caring for them, keeping them close to them, and providing enough milk for all of these lambs also. So they do breed precociously very early, so you just have to be a little careful with a ram lamb.
Tell me about the temperament of the sheep.
We love the temperament of these St. Croix sheep. They are, for the most part, fairly docile. They're not aggressive at all. We've never even had a ram that's acted aggressively towards people. They're polled, which means they don't have horns in either of the sexes there, which is an advantage sometimes. They flock very well, which means that they'll stay together in the field, which is helpful if you're using a herding dog or if that provides some protection from predators if they stay together. They're friendly enough to come up to you. They know who their owners are. They're used to a routine. So if you want them to come to you for feeding, they will learn to do that very easily. And if you raise them with people, they'll become very friendly and very pet-like.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned that about the sheepdogs, because these are sometimes used to train sheepdogs. Is that correct?
Yes. For the same reason that we like to keep them as sheep for our ranch, people want to use them as training sheep for herding dogs. They don't need to be sheared, so the ease of caring for your sheep, which is not your primary goal when you're training herding dogs, is easier. And because they tend to move easily, so that if you use a dog and he needs to learn what to do if the sheep don't just stand still where you put them, he needs to learn to go back around and find the sheep. These sheep are very good because they keep moving. They're not panicked, but they're also not unwilling to move at all. So,
would this be a good beginner sheep, in your opinion?
For someone who hasn't raised sheep, this is a wonderful breed because they require little care. They're very hardy. They obviously don't need to be sheared. They lamb pretty much unassisted. We've had well over 100 lambings, and we haven't had any disasters. So if you're a novice and you're just beginning, this is a great sheep. Their food requirements are relaxed because they're not producing lots of protein in their wool, so that they can thrive on lesser foods than some wool sheep can. And because they're browsers as well as grazers, they eat grass, which is lush and green. They also love weeds and tree leaves and whatever they can find. And they'll eat all of these things, even when it's brown and dry. So they're great sheep for a beginner.
In California, we have rental goat herds that are used to clear the brush alongside the roads. Do you use these guys to clear brush?
One of the reasons we got St. Croix sheep to start with was to help us reduce the weed load around our home, just so it was less fire prone. And they did a great job reducing some of that brown, weedy stuff, you know, around our house. They're not quite as good as goats in terms of eating everything, including your rose bushes. But unlike goats, they respect a fence. So if you put a fence around them and they have food, water, and shelter inside, they're not prone to wanting to get out just for the sake of getting out. So you won't find our sheep on the hood of your car or in your neighbor's garden. So they are useful as weed reduction, fire risk reduction animals also for grasslands.
Would the St. Croix sheep be a good commercial breed?
From a commercial perspective, because the animals have such a high lambing rate, in our case over 200%, and the fact that they're aseasonal breeders and you can get 3 lamb crops in 2 years, we thought they were an excellent choice for a commercial lamb production operation. We're able to get really high productivity out of the animals, as well as a low cost to produce, because we don't have to deal with issues such as parasites and shearing the animals and dealing with a lot of the other issues that have to do with wool breeds. So not only are we trying to conserve a threatened species, we're also trying to develop them into a viable commercial product that hopefully other breeders would become interested in as well.
And there's more output. It seems like it might be a perfect commercial breed.
While they do tend to be slightly smaller than some of the wool breeds, the fact that they do produce so many lambs and can produce basically year-round, we think more than makes up for that. So we do have a lower cost of production and a higher rate. Again, our lambing rate, something over 200%, about 220%. And our conception rate, if you will, is about 96%. So when we do put a ewe with a ram, there's an extremely high probability that that ewe will become bred and will successfully produce for us.
Yeah, but if you're being paid by the pound for meat and it costs less to produce that pound, then you're either dead even or ahead, even if they do produce less.
That is a definite advantage that we're able to produce more lambs. Also, because they're aseasonal breeders, we're able to produce lamb year-round. And there are several different strategies and plans for doing that. We lamb four times a year. So while most lamb producers are only able to lamb once a year, we're able to time it where that we're producing lamb to meet the market demands. And lamb is somewhat of a seasonal product.
So are you primarily basing your operations around breeding or around meat production?
Basically, we're doing both. While breeding stock is what we're primarily interested in, as a byproduct of that, we do end up with quite a few market lambs. And again, what we're hoping is the breeding stock will ultimately end up with people that are trying to produce market lambs. So either using the St. Croix to cross with another breed or straight St. Croix, because of all the production benefits, we're hoping commercial breeders will become more interested in them.
Niche marketing is important these days. Have you found your niche market?
We have a lot of people that are looking for small flocks, either for their own meat production or to sell on a small scale or to complement other operations. So they may be raising other livestock, they may be growing some small crops and using the sheep to graze after they've harvested their crops or to use them to graze in conjunction with cattle or other livestock.
One of the fastest growing markets for the table lambs is ethnic markets there, because they have a slightly different set of values that they're looking for with their meat, and we're able to be very particular and provide very individualized products for them. So if they want a certain age ram lamb, we can provide that. If they want a different age or a smaller or a larger, we can provide that too.
The demographic is changing rapidly in the United States, especially in the last 10 or 20 years. And I think that one thing that other cultures have brought to us is that we are so limited in our view of what meat is. And yet sheep and goat are excellent animals for production, and they're less resource consumptive in many cases.
Yes, the variety of food production just is really wonderful to see. We enjoy meeting these different cultures and different requirements and learning about what they're looking for and how they prepare the food. So we've enjoyed that too. It's just as a kind of a benefit of what we do as a living.
How long do they produce lambs over their lifespan?
We have an 8-year-old that's still producing twins and triplets and even a set of quadruplets there. They can produce for up to 10 years. At that point, most of their issues have to do with their teeth, so their lifespan after that is fairly limited, but of course we need them to be productive. But 8 to 10 years of productivity is really a good long time for you.
We learned at a card grading seminar that often whether or not an animal continues to stay alive and productive depends on teeth and hooves.
Yes, one of the great things about St. Croix sheep is that their hooves are so hoof rot and disease resistant, so that with a simple trim twice, sometimes three times a year, they're champions. We've never had hoof problems at all. And gosh, if their hooves aren't working, they can't breed well, they can't graze well, they're really in trouble.
When we first got them, we got a microscope and slides, and we were doing our own fecal samples. And we did, about a dozen?
Right.
We only found parasite eggs in one. So we thought we were doing it wrong and took it to the vet. And she checked the samples and said, no, you're doing it fine. You only have one animal that has any parasite eggs in it at all.
That can't be right.
That's right.
It's really true.
The vet said, you guys did it fine.
Isn't that a great thing?
Tell me about the Dorper cross and why you do that.
Well, his name is Sammy. He's Sammy the Lammy. And he is a cross between a St. Croix and a White Dorper. And what we're looking at doing is producing a heavier market lamb. He's about 2.5 months old and weighs about 60 pounds. Next to him, we have a pure St. Croix lamb that also is 2.5 months old and weighs about 54 pounds. So the cross produces about 10% greater weight at an equivalent age.
It was very nice of you to train them to stand next to each other so we could see.
That's
the two.
Right.
We've been working on that.
Well, this is quite a marked difference now. That now you're going to maintain the integrity of the St. Croix genetics and yet use them as a cross. This is not an uncommon thing we found.
No, and often people that are producing market lambs will do that. They'll cross two different breeds to try to get a specific type of lamb for a particular market. And lamb prices vary throughout the year, and we watch those. They're seasonal as well, and particular size lambs may bring a higher price. So for example, a 60 to 70 pound lamb may sell for more per pound than a heavier lamb, because there'll be a particular demand for that that size lamb. They dress out at about 50%. So a 70-pound lamb will live weight will produce about 35 pounds of meat.
Fantastic. Okay, so these are all St. Croix, one St. Croix Dorper, and is that it?
That's it. They're all St. Croix. Yeah.
They're all St. Croix.
And we'll always raise enough St. Croix to replace our purebred stock.
Yes.
So that's part of preserving the breed and at the same time having a viable operation to do that.
Hybrid vigor is a really good thing.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw our band t-shirts. That's what we called it, hybrid vigor.
I saw that.
That seems to be one of the biggest things that people use the heritage breed animals for is to get the characteristics that you want. You can use them and mix them as you want.
That's it. That's it.
Well, we wondered if you guys were in a band as well.
Well, that's our band t-shirt, but no, you don't want me in a band.
Okay.
Trust me. I can be the roadie, but that's it.
Rock and roll.
If you liked our podcast, please subscribe. This is how we keep going. And please tell your friends to join us. Please feel free to post any questions or comments that you might have to our social media sites. Our Twitter feed is at Backyard Green Films, spelled BKYRDGREENFILMS. Our Instagram is at Backyard Green Films, BACKYARDGREENFILMS. Our Facebook is Backyard Green Films. Our YouTube URL is YouTube.com/BackyardGreenFilms.
We would like to thank Bill and Lori Marion for taking the time to speak with us today about their St. Croix sheep. If you'd like to find out more information, please visit their website at ShastaRanch.net. Also, for more information about the St. Croix sheep, or other heritage breed animals, please visit thelivestockconservancy.org. You have been listening to Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Please tune in for more upcoming episodes from our travels. I'm Rick Bowman, your behind-the-scenes editor. Until next time. This has been a presentation of Backyard Green Films Productions, all rights reserved, copyright 2020.